Let's get a trio of Barbaras. We get my mom, her mom, and Kale's Barbara, and go fucking crazy. All right, everybody, welcome back to Dying to Talk. We got a very special guest. This might be the most you never thought it would be possible guest ever, only because she was living in Europe at the time. We have Brianna Benet today. Brianna, how are you?
I'm good.
Do you have a stage name now?
Or it's just Brianna Benet, because my actual name, I have two last names.
Oh, I know that. That's why I know it's only just one now.
Yeah.
You've rebranded.
Well, yeah, I guess so. I thought you were going to say that this was the most, you never believe it would happen because...
What?
You bullied me.
I didn't bully you. Okay. This is a bold... This is a bold episode. Somebody who... And this just goes back how much of a piece of shit that I am. Out of anybody that could have not been on the show, that had all the right to say, go fuck yourself, Mike Perillo and Dying Industry Films, and you're still here.
I'm still here.
So respect. I couldn't have bullied you that bad.
Well,
I didn't bully you. We just didn't get along. No, I wasn't like, Brianna, fuck you, kill yourself. You were like, you're an asshole. I'm like, well, you're an asshole.
Well, I never hated you, but that's private information.
So. Mm.
Not private. I don't know why I said that.
Well, now it's public.
Like public information.
So now this is going to be recut for Reels' sake and be on TikTok for the rest of the universe.
We'll just put that section in the...
It's
because I feel like you were always secretly our... you were always secretly major supporters of both Mike. And I always felt overwhelming support from you.
Yeah.
In high school. For real.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
I
think Mike just made it complicated for you to show that support to him.
Well... What I think it is, like, no joke, this is even me trying to make a bit, like, I have a hard time, like, receiving, like, support from people. Like, it really freaks me out.
We can tell.
Yeah.
You must be British.
Am I?
Are you?
Perhaps so I am. Sorry, that was fucking terrible.
Because every time I compliment the British people, they're like...
What are you doing that for?
Okay, thanks, darling.
Yeah, no, it's like, me and James talked about it when he was on the show. Like, it's just uncomfortable to be like, yeah, like... I'm like, stop.
I think I just grew up with a mother who's so complimentary.
Yeah.
But like only when it's actually good.
Yeah.
Like if you know my mom, like if you suck, she's not going to say one thing to you.
Yeah.
So when she actually compliments you, it's like, oh my gosh, it's good. So growing up, like she would, when I would do voice lessons, she'd be like, that sucked. You need to do it again. And then when it was actually good, she gives you your flowers. Yeah. So she was so complimentary and poured so much love on me. So then I'm like, oh, if I recognize talent in someone else, I need to do that. But people in high school found that so weird. Like, so weird. It wasn't just you. Like, other people. I'd be like, oh, my gosh, you did a great job. And they're, like, looking at me like I murdered them or something. Like,
yeah, that's what, pretty much.
Spencer was the only one who was like, thanks.
Do you see where it could be a little psychotic? Like, hey, great job. You did really good. Would you like a cookie that I baked? Could you see my side of it a tiny bit? Please, please. No, I'm just kidding. How you been, Brianna? Everything's good?
Well,
I mean, share. Whatever.
My dog died.
Rest in peace. This episode is dedicated to Darla, by
dedicated
the way.
To Darla Benet. She's my daughter. I've had her for 16 years, so that was rough.
Damn.
But I also had a really bad case of poison ivy all over my ankles and feet for the beginning of the summer.
Damn.
And I had to take steroids for it, so I... It's not what that wasn't good.
Yeah.
I'm going back to London in a few
nice
weeks, which is lovely. I love it there. Yeah, pretty good. Besides death, poison ivy. All the seven plagues of Egypt, really.
Yeah, just no crickets or frogs raining down from the sky.
Well, I saw a frog in my driveway, so maybe.
I get really excited when I see like frogs and like small reptile like turtles, because I always think we don't have them in our area, but we get turtles and we have toads and like bullfrogs.
The Hudson Valley is a really advanced ecosystem.
Like I was at work the other day and there was a snapping turtle on the lot, and I like lost my mind. Like I lost my mind, like I just met like Derek Jeter or some shit. Like oh my god, look. And everybody was like, yeah, they're here all the time. There's a swamp right there. And I go, huh. You know, you never really think about that. And I'm like, well, I'm just going to shut the fuck up, actually.
That's actually one group of fauna that my yard lacks.
What is fauna?
Animals. It's like flora and fauna.
Yeah, flora and fauna. So
good twin names.
Yeah, yeah. I know, right? Yeah, yeah, it's good. I think we nicknamed our nieces Sort of. Not really. My niece is that. But anyway.
Phoebe and Peeb.
We don't have any amphibians or reptiles on the property. We've had a bear. We've had deer. We have groundhog, rabbits, squirrels, all that shit. No reptiles. We need a little water feature.
Yeah. I don't like reptiles. So.
Really?
They're just so cool.
They're mad
so
cool.
So fucking cool.
Kara's lizard is the best. He's mad cool.
Probably because
he
Kara's
did shit in her
mom.
Bed the other day. That was really funny.
You know, the first time I saw a fox, mm-hmm. I kind of freaked out because we don't really have foxes here.
Yeah.
And in England, they run around like all the time.
Really?
They also scream all night because to mate, they like scream. And then when they're mating, they scream the entire like
ah!
No, more like screaming like
their little like their squeaky little noises.
So I thought it was no like screaming like for bloody murder. Like I thought people were being murdered.
Uh-huh.
And then someone was like, oh, it's just the foxes. And I'm like.
That's just the foxes, yeah?
That's just the foxes. Yeah, no. So then sometimes you'd see them. And
slipped right into the accent.
Yeah, I know. Sometimes you'd see them, like, in the street. And I'm like, you look fake. And it just reminds me of Fleabag, because anyone see Fleabag?
No, not okay. Familiar.
Miles won't shut up about it.
Season 2 is better.
Is it a show or a movie?
Watch it. It's a show.
But you can skip season 1.
What's it on?
Amazon Prime, I think.
Mm.
That was
I got beef
free,
on Amazon Prime
not
right
free
now.
Plug.
I got some beef on Amazon Prime.
Oh, just keep signing up for new accounts. That's what I do.
Well, so.
Free trial.
Amazon. So IMDb Pro is owned by Amazon.
Yeah.
Or IMDb. So I made us IMDb account to like try to like make our stuff look legitimate.
Yeah.
Everybody that's involved in productions have one. And then by doing that, somehow created. Because I used a different email. It like created another Amazon Prime account. And I was paying double. For Amazon Prime, and I kept trying to cancel it, and they're like, we can't. Like, I would talk with the virtual assistant, and they'd go, nah. Like, straight up, no. And it drove me insane, so I, like, canceled the IMDb Pro.
No.
Kept getting charged for it. I literally just went and got a new debit card and, like, have since to re-sign up for Amazon Prime. And also, according to Amazon, our podcast is the Queer West podcast.
Amazing.
If you Google Dying to Talk... with Mike Rillo, go to images. The cover art on Amazon is like a completely different podcast.
Are you sure it's just not like it does? It's just not you. It just looks different.
No. Because you click on me. I'm literally, I'm going to put in a screenshot. I'm going to give you I'm going to screen record exactly this. I'm going to put it in right now. And then as you can see, when you click that, it still comes to our show. But for some reason, the cover art is that Queer West podcast. Which is hosted by a drag queen. And we think it might be James's fault why that happened. Because we had him on and it might have messed up the algorithm because he's a drag queen.
Yeah. Not a bad way to
drag
mess
performer.
Up in the algorithm.
Yeah, no, so I don't care. I think it's really funny. I hope it never changes.
Yeah.
You could
I hope
be on
it
like
never changes.
Serial killers.
Yeah, it could have done like a hard image of Jeffrey Dahmer. Like.
Yeah.
Or what's the, isn't there a Dying to Talk that's about more, like it's a mortician podcast?
Yeah, it's a mortician podcast.
That's so cool.
I know, right?
They're like, so this week we're going to be talking about embalming. It's like,
I've actually learned a lot about, like, not necessarily embalming, but, like, the process of a cemetery, because the book I'm writing is, like, partly...
Oh, you're writing a book?
Yes.
Oh.
My first novel. It's not my first I've written. I wrote some in high school, but then I abandoned those.
Why?
So this is the first one. Why?
Were you getting bullied too much?
No. They were just bad at that time. Well, at the time, they were not bad.
Mm-hmm.
But when you go back and read your old stuff, when you're, like, better at the thing, like better at writing, I was like, oh, that's like the idea was good, but it was going nowhere.
Would you ever revisit them?
Yes, there's one I want to revisit, but I don't like the title, I don't like the plot, so I'll have to change it. I started changing it already, but this one I want to finish because it's about like grief and like an accurate representation of grief in young adult fiction, because as a youth and now I read a lot of young adult, cause that's what I want to write. So, I notice that when it's like books about death, it's always like someone goes absolutely crazy and off the deep end, or someone like doesn't care. And there's no like that in between where you like wake up and then suddenly you miss the person who died and you're like, you were fine the day before.
Yeah.
So I really wanted to, after my grandmother died, I just observed my mother, because my mom essentially became an orphan as an adult because everyone's dead. So then I wanted to write about that. So that's what the book's about, kind of.
Cool.
but I need to finish it. I have a hefty chunk of it done, like 70-something thousand words, so it's nearly done.
Damn. Yeah, I struggle with finishing a lot of projects. Back to your first point of like you write something years ago, and you wouldn't get to the point of being able to identify that it was bad without you keep that's how, you know, getting better as a writer. But I didn't know you write books. It's interesting.
Yeah.
Now it makes sense.
Yeah.
It makes a lot more sense.
A writer was what I first wanted to be. Mm-hmm. Even before I wanted to be an actor, singer, everything. I've been writing since I was a kid. I got published as a poet when I was in elementary school.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
So I have been writing. But people who I like did theater with, like no one in that realm really knew that I write.
Kept that low key.
Yeah. The only person was like Steve. Okay. Because we're like besties.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And Angelique too. But yeah. Nobody, people probably don't know who I just name dropped, but
I name drop people that nobody, okay, they'll never see in the physical universe. Nobody listens to the show, by the way, just so you know. Okay, so
cool. Cool.
7 viewers.
But yeah, I do write. I'm trying to write music now because I have a bunch of musical friends over across the pond. So
yeah, we're on that. Where the most inspiration, like, has moving to Europe, moving to London, really sparked the creativity for you? Or coming back home for a little bit, did you also, you got a lot of ideas to take with you or no?
Well, my dog dying is going to really help me with my book.
Yeah.
Because the reason why I like kind of took a break from writing it is because the part I'm writing right now is like such a heavy part. And I was like, but I don't remember being that sad. Like, because I wasn't in like active grief at the time. But now I can write it because now even though it's a dog, it's like you're kind of, it kind of brings back like other memories of like other people dying. But moving to London has been the best thing that I could have ever done. Technically, I'm not like fully moved there because I'm like I'm a visitor, but that's for legal reasons. But yeah, I've met the people who I've met have really just given me such inspiration. I got to do, well, this woman from my church, she asked me to write a song. She asked me and my friend Murray. Hi, Murray, you're not gonna listen to this, but
if you share it to your Instagram story and she follows you, she might click on the reel. Maybe
he might. Yeah. But so she asked the both of us to write a song. And I was like, dude, we gotta write a song. And he was like, no, I don't want, like, I can't, because he's super busy, he has his own music. And so I was like, you know what, I'll just go home and I'll sit with my guitar. And I was like praying about it as well. And I was like just sitting there and I'm like, and then I wrote a song in 30 minutes. And then I was like, oh, this can't be like it. And I sent it to the woman and she's like, I sent it to 5 different people. I'm like, ma'am. You have
7 tour dates tomorrow. Yeah, be in Nashville at 6 a.m.
She's like, I sent it. She's like, darling, it's great. I love it.
This is in London.
This is in London, yeah.
Right, okay.
She's like, darling, it's great. I love it. So she was like, how can we make this like a real song, like record it? So I was like, well, you can get in contact with like my friend Murray. And she got in contact with him. And he has like, there's like a little recording studio that he works in his office at the church. And so we recorded there. We got the violinist to come in. All these, because the violin was like a last minute thing, because my friend Simeon, who's a producer, he produced the whole thing. And we were all there doing like the instrumental part. And Murray's sitting there like doing the strings. And he just turns around and goes, we need a real violinist. These strings are not good enough. So I call up one of my friends who's a classical violinist there. And she like couldn't do it because she went to go record music. Damn. And then I call up David. Shout out to David. Who's like insanely smart and was doing a PhD. And I was like, hey, could you be here by like 5 to do some strings? And he shows up and he just bangs
out
some strings.
That's gotta feel so cool to just be like, yo, we need a violinist. I got you.
Yeah.
He'll be here in a few hours. That's, yeah. That's producing. That's like producing in a nutshell. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to do that with this project. I'm not gonna speak on it, but I'm trying to get in contact with Matt fucking Levenstein. If you're out there, answer the damn phone, bro. Fuck. Were you also, I know you sing, obviously, and you do. It seems like you moved out to London and started doing all these other things. Or were all these things you were doing. You just kept it on the low. Why are you keeping it on the low?
Well, you also like didn't know me that much.
I knew you pretty well.
No, you did.
Am I a monster?
You're not a monster, Mike.
I know I am. You're not a monster, Mike.
You were just insecure and sad and traumatized. Yes. So
extremely. Where do you think traumatized part? I agree with the first two. I'm just curious. Like, where do you think that?
Well, I mean,
I don't know.
Well,
your dad did die.
Yeah.
That was like a long
time. No, but at the time, you were still very like, I mean, obviously you're always going to be affected by it, but at the time it was still very fresh. And that, I feel like, kind of informed some of your decisions or like your thought processes.
That's interesting. I am only going to disagree because I know what I was like dealing with. The dad, the father stuff was always like maybe fourth in the trauma gun. There was like three other things that were before it. But yeah.
Also, it was just high school and we were teenagers and there was a lot going on. So
we were theater kids. The absolute fucking worst that ever could exist.
The thing is, too, I feel like a lot of the theater kids were only stuck in the theater department. I was not because I know you weren't either, but I was not like I was friends with the most like random people from all the corners of NFA because I was in so many different like courses. Like I used to be in honors courses and then I wasn't going to go to college. So I told my guidance counselor. I was like, in mine, like he did whatever I wanted him to do. Like he was
nice.
Amazing. Mr. Hill, shout out. But I was like, do I need this as a Regents course? He's like, no. And I was like, sure, drop me down. So he put me in like inclusion geometry.
The hell is that?
Inclusion is like it's mixed with special ed and regular ed together. And then the kids like tried to stage like this mutiny and like they were like, you teach better than the teacher and like told the teacher that she sucked. And I'm just sitting there and I'm like,
geometry.
Hi, guys.
I spent all 4 years of high school taking ninth grade math.
Badly.
Not because I'm bad at math. I just absolutely refuse to do math. I'm okay at math. Like, I'm all right. I know the – like, for what my job and what my career is, I know the math that I need to do. But was I taking the same algebra class all 5 years of college? I have a podcast now, so what do you think? Yes.
Yes.
Yes, I was.
But
so with the music.
With the music.
And the London.
I always just wanted to be an actor. Mm-hmm. I never wanted to sing because I always thought that actors who sing were not serious. And then I got into theater when I started at NFA because I was in this touring musical called Letters to Daddy, which was a musical key to Bully Free.
I know.
You
were on tour?
We were on tour around like New York. Like we did like a regional tour.
Okay.
That's crazy because I probably, I don't know.
We came to NFA and we did a performance for the NFA for like NCSD students, and there was
fire. Yeah, and I definitely watched that.
You probably did.
I 100% watched that.
Which ones you bought front row tickets for that?
Laura was in that with me.
Oh, yeah.
Another person who dropped out and being on the show. Shout out to Laura.
But
I don't care, by the way. Like, if you say you're going to be on the show and then you don't, I don't care. I'm still going to be making episodes.
Sounds a little bit like you.
No, I just want to say that just in case. Anybody, shut up. That's why you're not even on camera. So,
So in high school, I did dabble in music and like writing music, but I really got into theater. And Cliff literally said to me my freshman year when I auditioned, she went, do you want to be on Broadway? She's like, you're going to be on Broadway. You need to dance because you're not very good. Like she basically said, I'm not very good at dancing. So then I started taking ballet just to get good at dancing. And now I'm decent. But yeah. And then after I left high school, I went straight into the auditioning. Kind of abandoned the music, but I did learn guitar senior year. Mm-hmm. So that's why I kind of got into like music like that. And then I got scouted for modeling and then I went into doing that.
Wow.
Because
they just like picked you out of a...
No.
Were you waiting in line at fucking Baked by Melissa and they go, hey, you.
Baked by Melissa. I was in Adidas.
You're at Adidas.
I was gonna say Adidas.
Adidas.
But I was at an Adidas casting with my commercial agent, and this girl in line was like, "Are you a model?" And I was like, "Not really. Like I do acting." And she was like, "Here's some agencies like you should submit and like apply." So one agency got back to me, and while I was at the orientation I'm still a student at FIT, in the city, but while I was at my orientation for that, I had to go, like, leave and go to the modeling agency.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
It's a flex.
And then I got they signed me. And then the pandemic came, so I couldn't actually do anything. And during that time, I got better at guitar and I started writing music and poem. Like, I started writing a lot during the pandemic. And then I was like, I want to go to London. Because when I first signed with my modeling agency, they were like, you have a really sad face, and that's really good for London.
Wait, what do you mean by
like,
that?
I have a really, like, I have this, like, you know. And
what
when
kind
I,
of face do I have?
Like, you just look like the guy from Flushed Away.
Oh, my God, yeah. With a light human trait.
It's all gone down the drain, hasn't it?
I love Flushed Away.
Flushed Away.
I just look like animated films from the early
2000s. When I see one.
Was that made by the same people that made? We're getting off topic. Anyway, continue. Thank you.
It's a great off topic to be on. I love Flushed Away. what was I saying? Oh, so yeah. I was like, you know what? I'm just going to go. And I went for 2.5 months. Mm. So I hope my like dad or my oldest brother never sees this because they didn't know I left and went to England.
Ooh.
It was like a big thing. They don't know. They still don't know that I went. But I was there for 2.5 months, just chilling. I had saved up money from working. Mm. Spent it all in those 2.5 months.
Working in London?
No, working in America.
Where are you working?
Modeling. I was doing modeling. Oh, right.
Too good for a retail job, I see.
I have never had a retail job, but I have had jobs.
I
with my schedule as a teenager, I could have never done that. Mm. I was doing training and stuff. But yeah, what was I saying? Oh,
you're saying you went to London for two
I went
months.
To London. I got signed in London. I came back. My mom was like, you are miserable here. Mm. And my agency there was like, we really want to continue working with you. Can you please like come back eventually? So then August 2022, I went back and I was supposed to stay for 6 months. I ended up staying for like a whole year. Mm. And yeah, I've been modeling over there and doing, I mostly do like commercial stuff.
That probably pays really well, right?
When you do get them.
Yeah.
But like when they're super spaced out, it's like, so I'm hoping like, now that I've kind of made an impression with casting, like casting teams and things like that, it should be a bit easier this time around to get regular work, just because you really have to let them know you do good work and see them like 50 billion times before they regularly hire you. So I feel like I've done that now with a few of the big casting teams. And we also changed my look. I have to go get my braids when I get back to the country.
Oh yeah, you debraided.
Because it's expensive, but my agent's like, yeah, you kind of work like they're more interested in you when you have braids.
Interesting.
And I was like, okay.
So with modeling, it can be very subtle fixes or like changes.
Yeah.
That can just come.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Okay.
Because in the pictures, like sometimes the hair, like especially being like mixed race, there's ways that you can look more mixed race. And the braids I think are more of like it is about like diversity, like it's more like, see, she's a diverse girl, like. And I just love the braids because when I go on set, my hair is always gonna look good. Some people just do not know how to make my hair look nice. Excuse how it looks today because I just washed it, but
person who cuts my hair, same, she can never make my hair look good. It's my mom. Anyway, continue.
I mean, I had a really good haircut once, but
one time.
Once in England. And the girl's TikTok famous and she's brilliant. But it just wasn't working. I feel like there's a lot of mixed race girls who look like me with the same with curly hair. And so the braids, the clients, they're like, just adds a little something, you know? Like,
gotcha. Do you ever try to play into it like, oh, you like me to look more ethnic, let me try this thing, put like a gold hoop in the braid or something? I don't know.
Like gold, the gold jewelry?
Yeah.
Do that anyway. Yeah. Like, oh, but right, they don't like that. Like, my agents don't like that.
Because
you're supposed to go as, like, clean as possibly can.
Okay. Like, as, like, natural looking, right?
Natural
That's
as you possibly can.
That's interesting. Well, I guess it makes sense because then it's like a better canvas to work with or whatever.
Yeah. Like, the outfits we wear, it's pretty much, like, solid. Like, we can't really wear colorful clothes to go on a casting, unless it's a commercial casting. But through the years, I've kind of realized that as long as your outfit looks like a blank canvas, you can literally wear whatever you want. It used to be a uniform. You used to have to wear, like, black skinny jeans and a white tank top, like, all the time to castings.
Okay.
But it's literally – but they – you know, casting directors know what they want within the first 20 seconds of meeting you.
Yeah.
If they don't like you in the first 20 seconds, they're not going to like you by the callback. The last job I did in London, when I got called in for it, I was like, I am not right for this. Like, well, not that I wasn't right for it, but I was like, I don't think I fit the thing. It's like to play video games. Can't discuss it. Signed an NDA. Hasn't come out yet. So.
Oh, yeah. You didn't tell me about this
off camera. And the casting team, I had been in for them before. So even though I wasn't, like, exactly what was written on paper, they were like, oh, we know how she works. And so they called me in. And then I got a call back. And then when it came down to the role, they were like, hey, you're not right for the role, but we really want you on set. And so they found somewhere to put me in the commercial just so I could be on set. And that's because they liked me within, like, the first time they met me.
Yeah.
So...
the personality
of New York charm.
It is.
Oh my! It actually does me so many favors. Because here it's like you blend in. There I'm like, oh my gosh, hi. And then I'm also American. And I'm not as reserved as British people. Like, they're very much like, hi guys, hello.
You're like, yo, what up, homie? I'm like, what's hey poppin'? Guys,
what up? And they're like, oh my gosh, where are you from? Like, that's so fun.
Oh my God, we love it.
However, once I... so some commercials, if they want a British person, I tape in a British accent. And once I went to the callback and I asked the girl, I was like, so what accent? She went, oh, just a normal accent. Like, don't feel pressure to be posh. And I'm like, okay. So I walk in the room and they're all like, hi, Brenna. Like, it's so nice to see you. And I was like, do you guys know I'm American? They were like, what? They're like, we thought because of your tape that you were British.
Wow.
And
fooling
I was
the
like,
people that invented the British accent.
I was like, thank you guys so much. Like, that's such a compliment. Yeah, and they're like, can you just like do the callback? And I was like, okay, so I'll switch. And I spoke to them the entire callback like this. And I did the entire callback like this. And
that's insane.
I didn't book that job, but you know, it was
because
was
you're
crazy.
Not a countryman. You're not of country blood or whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't know. British people are fucking...
they're weird.
Loyalist.
It's the same way over here, though, with the accent.
Actually,
the
I was a loyalist when I was a kid.
You were a British supporter?
Can I tell
so
you this
when you're
story?
Learning about the Revolutionary War, yes. You sided with the British?
Yes, okay. Because I was like a patriot, right? And then...
communist.
This is...
I'm just kidding. I'm kidding.
So when we were learning about the Revolutionary War... the Revolutionary War, you know, like the reason that they got taxed was because they started the French and Indian War after King George or whoever the heck, it wasn't King George at that time, the crown was like, hey guys, don't go into that territory. And so they kept going in and then they kept getting killed. And so they were like, hey, please, you have to declare war. And so then after that, England was like, okay, but now you have to pay for it. Because the British people, they were like, we're not paying for those stupid colonists' war. Like, you told them not to do that. So then that's why they were taxed, was because of the war. And as a kid, I remember going, they caused it. Why don't they just pay for it? Like, pay your taxes to pay for the war that you started.
Well, that's the thing.
And they're like, you're not supposed to.
Yeah, the colonists are all the people that got kicked out of England for being pieces of shit, mostly. I mean, it's all Protestants and shit like that.
Huh.
And they all come and they're all, oh, we're just going to take and take and take. And, you know, that's America. That's,
but also,
that's
like,
America,
they
baby.
Didn't want to pay for the war that Britain specifically told them not to start.
I will say, though, and I'm only saying this because because there's French and Indian War is the same as the Seven Years' War. But the Seven Years' War is the greater, like, world global conflict. And then the French-American War is what was going on during the Seven Years' War in America, I think.
Okay.
I don't know.
Whatever
I mean,
you
I,
say.
I don't know, maybe. I don't know. No, I was hoping for some confirmation, but
I know nothing about the Seven Years' War.
I think they're the same.
My expertise is revolutionary and civil.
Yeah.
I was
revolutionary.
Is Spencer's mic super loud or is it good? All right, cool. Because I know
he,
that
he's killed it.
All right, cool. No, I'm just checking. You're up on that thing.
Yeah, I'm in there.
Just making
sure. Get up on that.
Yeah, and I'm just such a loud person, which I'm
really?
That's when I get excited.
Yeah. You can't. There's two loud people in a room.
No, right.
What are you
gonna
do?
I'm just the quiet, reserved one that has a.
I always say, like, next to me, people look quiet, but.
Next to me, people look quiet?
People look quiet. Like, people who are, like, big personalities, I feel like.
Yeah, well, knowing the people that you're friends with that we know, it's like, that checks out. Like, Steven's quiet. The church mouse.
That's what you think.
Like,
to us.
Project like crazy.
Steven is a yapper.
Yeah.
D1? Division 1 yapper?
Yes.
Ain't we all?
You just gotta get
I mean, I have a degree in yaponomics, but from Yapville University.
Yeah. I got kicked out of Yapville.
Ugh.
Yeah, for napping. But you don't have, you're on a visa, right? You don't have.
I'm on a visa,
but you're trying to get citizenship.
Yeah, I do eventually want to live there, but I went after Brexit, so I could not settle as a European. I can literally go anywhere else in Europe.
But the UK.
But the UK.
Gotcha.
I can move to Ireland because they're still part of the EU. My mom is gonna move within the next 2 years somewhere over there.
I remember you were telling me that.
Yeah. She doesn't know where yet. She wants to look at Ireland, but also she doesn't want to live in the cold. And I'm like, you know, Ireland gets so cold. Because the Irish also love Americans, so it's like kind of works.
Oh, nice.
But she also speaks Spanish. She might want to go to Spain, so she understands.
Yeah, but don't they speak different? It's different in Spain, right?
Unless she moves to like where they speak Catalan, but she's not going to move to the mountains.
Yeah, they just have a different like accent.
What's the what's the theater like? Culture in the UK, like, are you still auditioning for stuff too, or are you just only doing going for you?
I was telling Kara the other day, I was like, I can never go back to just sitting in a room for 8 hours waiting to be seen, because it's all appointments in England.
Really?
It's all appointments. Wow. I mean, the thing is, you have to have an agent in order to audition.
Okay.
But there's so many small boutique agencies where even if you couldn't get in with like a huge one, I have a boutique agency. Mm-hmm. But even before that, like, my first audition was Hamilton.
That's the musical about the pig, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And that was an open call on their Instagram, and I submitted to it, and then they asked me to come in, and I've been in for them like 4 times now.
Damn.
I've been in for the tour for the UK. I just think I have to age into like Angelica more. I feel like that's the role that I'm more suited to.
Mm-hmm.
And they keep calling me in for like Peggy and Mariah and all that.
Damn, not Peggy. You don't want to be Peggy.
Well, no.
She also doubles as what's her name in the
Mariah
second
Reynolds.
Match, right?
Yeah. I really don't want to play Mariah Reynolds, to be honest.
I get it. Like, I get it. But like, at least she got a good song. Like, I think her song is cool.
I love singing that song.
Exactly.
But also, it's like, great. Infidelity.
Yeah.
I'm not a child from an affair, but anyway.
Okay.
So the audition process, you get called in. I'm trying to think of what show I was called in. Oh, Lion King. So Lion King was an open call in London, but it was the most well-run open call. Like, I was there for maybe 1 to 2 hours. Like, it wasn't like waiting all day to be seen.
Yeah.
And this was an open call, and I didn't even get there super early. I got
there.
Is there
like equity? There's no equity in.
There's equity, but there's no like equity appointments.
Okay.
You get into equity once you get into a show.
Mm.
Like, and then equity.
In the UK, it's like that. America's not like that.
No.
Which sucks.
Like, you have to be in equity to get those equity appointments.
Yeah.
Here, it's pretty much your agent gets you the appointment.
And that's what Kara did, and she kind of like shot herself in the. But it's okay. She'll be fine. She'll land something.
This is for like the whole like London's version of Broadway kind
West
of thing.
West End, yeah.
West
it's
End,
called okay. West End.
West End.
That's pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
Broadway or West End? I don't know.
West End.
Wow.
Someone asked me. They were like, "Would you come back and like, would you be on Broadway? Like, do you care to be on Broadway anymore?" I was like, "Not really, to be honest with you."
I feel like Broadway has gotten mad. Like,
I'd have to live in New York City, and I can't stand New York City. Which, if you told me that in 2017, that I could not stay in New York City, I would never believe you. Because I was like,
because you went to London.
I need to be a city girl. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just, I just like it there. I mean, it's still expensive. It still has its issues. But I just like it. But the process, so when I went to the Lion King, my agent was like, there's this open call, you should go to it. And I was like, okay. So I showed up, I went with my agency's like resume, and then I got a call back through my agent.
Nice.
Had an appointment for a time slot, got to go to the time slot, and it was great. Like, I didn't have to wait. Everyone in the rooms is like really nice because we know that, like, we're not really competing to be seen. We yeah. all have appointments. Same thing with Hamilton. I got an initial audition for the tour from when they had seen me months prior. Mm. And they contacted my agent and they were like, can she come in at this time? Like, it's just very easy.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's less stressful. And I've gotten to the point, I think it's because my frontal lobe developed when I turned 25 or something. I don't know.
Mine developed crazy this summer. That shit, I got two of them. I have to get it checked out.
I just think that now, like, I really don't care when I go into auditions. Mm. Like, I'm like, I'm just going to sing. Like, I was like, next time I get called into Hamilton, I'm going to sing a Hannah Montana song, like, because it suits the role something. Yeah. Like, just because it, and also they don't know, like, certain songs over there, like, that I would use. Like, I used All I Ask by Adele in my audition, and the music director was like, that is a beautiful song. Who is that by? And I'm like, Adele.
You should have made it up. I did.
He was like, I thought it was, like, a song from like the 70s or the 80s. And I'm like, no, sir.
No, no. No, she's Adele.
But yeah, it was, I just find the casting teams to be, they're also more honest. Like, they will not put energy into you if they don't like you right off the bat.
Yeah.
I feel like here they could be very like, oh my gosh, Slay Queen, hey.
Yeah.
I also get Slay Queened. I'll explain what that means. Less in London when I'm on shoots.
Okay.
So there's like this phenomenon with curve and plus size models, especially if you're like a person of color, I guess, and you're a curve and plus size model. When you go on set, they don't want to direct you because they're very like touchy. Like, they don't want to be like, oh, like suck in your stomach. But even if I'm a curve or plus size model, I still want to look like bomb in a picture. I don't want to be like crumpled over like a bag of blobs or something. Mm. And so they like don't really want to direct you, but they'll direct like the skinny model. And so when it's your turn, they'll be like, yeah, Slay Queen, like so good. Just like, I hate when people say Slay Queen. Like, Slay Queen, so good. Yes, mama, it's like you're doing so well. But no direction. And then you get the pictures from the shoot and you're yeah, like, this is horrendous.
Why do you think that is? Do you think because they like truly don't know how to like direct you, or they're like, I know how to, but I don't want to be perceived as like,
yeah.
The second thing.
Yeah, I definitely think that
they're that like afraid of getting like, oh, I guess British people kind of did start the whole fucking trend.
No, this is in New York.
This was in New York.
In New York.
Oh.
Yeah. In New York.
Interesting.
And because I feel like I mean, there's nothing wrong with being politically correct, but like,
yeah,
the politically correctness in the industry in America sometimes can make plus size and curve models feel othered. Because especially from my experience, like, I want, like, they're directing the model, like, do this, tilt your back, like, do all this stuff, like a skinny model. And then I walk on set and they just like let me do whatever. And I can't tell how I look. Sometimes there's no monitors and you're really not supposed to watch yourself while you're modeling. You're just supposed to model. And sometimes I just know now, because I've been doing it for a while, like the shape of my body, like whatever, like how it's going to look in the picture. But sometimes I don't. And sometimes there's like, I don't want my leg to pop a certain way, or I don't want to like crouch over too much because I don't want it to look a certain way in a photo. But they won't tell you that. But there is a way to direct people who are not like thin without being like, look at you, blubber, like stand up straight. Like, there is a way to do it. I just think that some people, they don't know where to like toe the line. Mm. But like, the thing is, a lot of my other plus size model friends, they're like, who are like even like bigger than me in the industry, they'll be like, we know we're fat, like you can tell us what to do, like on set, like it's literally our job to model, so tell
like
us,
you hired us for this
thing.
Like,
as long as you're not like roasting or telling us like how much you hate how we look when you hired us, it's just, but if you want to direct us. And I feel like when I went to London, obviously none of what I'm saying is like can be applied to everybody. This is just my experience. But when I went to London, I feel like they were directing me so much more. Like, they'd be like, stretch this part of your body to make yourself look longer, like do this. And My agents were also really nice over there compared to here. I had to drop my agency here.
Do you think that has to do a little bit with just people that are directing plus size models just don't even know what they're looking for in a certain respect, or you think they do and it's purely just...
Well, I think they don't know what they're looking for, and I think they also... Because you can take a picture of me in a certain angle, and I don't look like plus size or curve model. Like, I just look like a... Well, I think I am the body of a normal person, but you know what I mean? Like, but sometimes they don't... Sometimes they use plus and curve models for just diversity.
Yeah.
And so they want a person with, like, stomach rolls and stuff. So they will... have you not tell you so you could stand a certain way, so that way on their website it's like, look, we have a girl with rolls, look, we have a girl with like cellulite and stuff, and that does happen. And it's like, I don't like the body positivity movement. I am very for body neutrality, where it's like, this is my body and this is how it is. If I want to change it, I have the right to do that, but also this is the body I live in, and I don't have to, like, you don't have to have this overwhelming, like, I love myself, I love my role, I love my tummy. Like, because even, like, people who are thin don't love themselves every single day. So why do plus size people have to be like, oh, yes, I love my stretch marks every day. I wake up and I'm like, I love it. Like, that's weird. And, like, even the whole, like, trend of like, Instagram models, like sitting versus standing, or like grabbing their like stomachs and stuff. I think it's weird because one of my friends who is a really successful plus size model, when she posts like fitness stuff, people are like, wow, like you must like you hate yourself, you're exercising. When she's just like exercising because not because she wants to be thin, but because she wants to be like fit and healthy. And people like they want, a lot of people, especially with social media, want you to fit in, like, this box. That's why I've never – my agents have asked me about the idea of, like, doing body positivity content. And I'm like, I don't really agree with the whole body positivity, like, Instagram. Because it's constantly, like, you have to make content, like, these are my roles and this is my – like, you – I think it's more beneficial to other people to seeing bigger bodies just living and just doing things. Because you're not putting a spotlight on their body. You're just putting a spotlight on, oh, this is a person living their life.
And I think anytime, like, there is a spotlight on one thing, people are – they're just going to hate it. There's, like, almost only negative comments all the fucking time. You could look across the board, like, any sort of, like, social topic. And it's fucking crazy that, like, if – like you said, somebody's working out, they're heavy set, all the comments are, like
– yeah.
But then if you – that can hurt a lot of fucking people. I think the people that are commenting that shit are shot and fucking insane. And they're clearly not the audience that these businesses, companies, agencies, whatever, are trying to do. And, but like, why the fuck do you care if somebody has stretch marks? Like, I care about my body and that is it. On behalf of everybody else, I don't give a fuck. Spencer can gain 300 pounds tomorrow. Wouldn't care, because in my head I'm like, I'm still better looking than him anyway, so.
And he's just Spencer, like, at the end of the day.
Imagine,
but that's what I'm saying,
a 400 pound me,
that'd be terrifying. But not because like you'd be fat, it's just like I don't know.
Would be concerned.
I'd be concerned a little bit, considering he's like 90 pounds soaking wet.
But I think that's the difference between body positivity and body neutrality, like, movements, is because the body positivity movement is like, if Spencer gained 300 pounds tomorrow,
like, it's great.
And he goes, oh, that he doesn't feel well. Like, he doesn't feel good in his body. He doesn't like it. The body positivity is more about, no, you look great. Like, you don't have to change. Like, don't change. Like, blah, blah, blah. Body neutrality is more like, listen, you can stay in the body you're in, but if you're feeling uncomfortable in it, you can also change it.
Yeah.
And that's more like being neutral. And it's like, okay, well, I'm going to be myself and like myself at whatever I'm at. Like, I wake up tomorrow, I got big hips. That's just like, there's no sense in being like me going online and like, hey guys, these are my jiggly thighs. Like, I don't think that helps anyone.
Yeah.
It makes more sense like to just post my work and be like, look, I'm this size, I look like this, and I'm working, rather than
also to attack the model that like just simply got hired to do a thing.
Oh, it's
like
gosh.
Fucking insane. We talked about this literally yesterday about like how actors get attacked for like a performance that somebody doesn't like. It's just like this, the miserable internet world, bro. Everybody just has to hate something. They just think about how much time is wasted by people just going, I'm going to comment on this person's video, and this person's pissed me, and this is making me mad too. How dare you?
I know a few models.
Go outside, touch grass, please.
I know a few models recently who got like these big campaigns, and in the industry we're all like, oh my gosh, that's amazing. The comments are like, why do you put a flabby, like nasty looking, like go exercise, blah, blah, blah. Or if you have like plus size models do activewear campaigns, sometimes some people in the comments just go insane. It's like, so do you want fat people to exercise or not? Like, what do you? What?
It's like, why are they in leggings and a sports bra? It's like, are you buying it?
And
white
also,
guy from fucking Michigan? No.
Also, fat doesn't mean unfit. Fat is a thing that you have, not a thing that you are.
Yeah.
So everybody has fat. If you didn't, you'd be dead. So,
facts.
Like, that's why I'm like body positive. I've talked to my agents about this too. My lovely agents. They're like, we understand what you mean, because then it be like body positivity movement made like diversity in the industry, whether it be racial diversity, cultural diversity, or even body diversity. It made it extremely tokenized to the point where they'll have like one of each race in a campaign, but like can't have three black girls in the same campaign because that just looks crazy.
Yeah.
But you could have like three white girls and then a black girl. And it's like, they're like, see, we have like this
one
person.
One of these.
And a lot of times they'll do like a person of color who is also a plus size model to like really encapsulate it, rather than like genuinely making the campaign based off of like the best models for it, and because like they genuinely want to be diverse, which diverse doesn't just mean it's not just in one group, it's like all across the board.
And still the producers and executives are controlling, they're all white,
all white guys
for the most part.
Yeah.
I'm sure. Yeah.
Working on, I've worked on a few productions, I'm not anti-men or anything, but like I've worked on a few productions that are run by like completely black women, like production, casting, everything. Such a different vibe on those sets. Like they're blasting music. It's like truly like I felt really supported on those sets. I've never had like terrible experiences on set, luckily.
That's good.
But there's a difference when the team is not all like a homogenous group of people.
I do think there is something about like,
what are you trying to say? You're calling dying industry films out? No, I'm just kidding.
But you're not a homogenous group of people. You have.
Oh, wait. What's homogenous?
Homogenous is like where you all look the same, you all think the same.
Oh,
like,
that's what I thought you were. Okay, never mind. I was
like,
just trying to
be you funny. Guys have tiffs. You think differently.
What's tiffs?
Tiffs, like, are you little arguments, like
never.
Disagreements?
We never disagree.
You
no,
think
we do
differently.
All the time.
Like, you like have a range of different people, like, in and around the. So that's like, you have different perspectives.
Yeah.
I'm talking about like he said, like all like
I just,
same age.
I didn't know what
white,
that
exactly.
What was that word?
Homogenous.
I didn't know what that meant. I'm so confused.
That's like, all
whoa,
the
whoa.
Same.
So like, whoa, hold on, pal. Well, I drink my milk the same as everybody else.
Homogenized, isn't that like a, yeah? That is a milk. Thing.
That's what I thought. I was so thing. Fucking lost.
I used AI to get that word. Sorry,
I used
man.
AI to create a streetwear brand. Yeah, I don't think I'd. I hate taking pictures of myself. I would never want to model ever. Even if I was like a famous actor and go, hey, we'll give you $10 million. Just model this watch. Nope.
$10 million?
Can't do it.
$10
million? Can't fucking do it. You know what I hate about modeling? Look, I'm all about whatever people model. But one thing that needs to fucking stop
what?
Is this fuck ass pose where people are like popping their hood mid like they're like.
On their toes?
Just like anybody that's wearing a hoodie and they're like smiling going.
They
I see
make
it
us
all
do
the
that.
Fucking time.
No, they make us do that. So there's
and what's with Levi's commercials? They always have to dance like, in their jeans. No fucking professional dancer dances in jeans,
I will
bro.
Say, I did just see. I might
that's
have been Levi's or something.
It's always Levi's.
It was a cool ass commercial.
It is. They always lie. Dancing in them
great.
Jeans.
It was cool. They're just
also
dancing.
The song that's like
feel the way you want to feel with Levi's. Express
I'm saying
yourself.
That, but I did a commercial for Lidl in the UK, and I'll show you in a sec. Like. It was literally that. And they were like, we had to dance for literally 6 hours
in
straight.
Jeans?
I think I was in like gym shorts or something.
All right.
But
that makes sense.
Yeah. But we were wearing merch from the brand. So I was in like slides and like socks. I got to keep the socks. That was the one thing I got to keep.
Please stop doing dancing jean commercials. It's driving me crazy.
Gotta get a Kohl's back to school.
No.
Maybe that's what Diff is missing. God. That's what Diff is missing is a dancing jeans commercial.
Oh, I got ideas. Trust me. Oh, fuck. I hate those commercials. Commercials suck.
But they
now.
Make us do that. There's like different sectors of modeling. There's like e-com, which is basically when you go on and shop online.
Mm-hmm.
That's e-com. E-com is like one of the most difficult, in my opinion. Because imagine trying on clothes for 8 hours straight. Like just hundreds of outfits.
I can't even try on clothes like now.
Yeah. I feel so mentally like gone after doing e-com. I mean, e-com is great because that's regular work and it usually pays at least like $750 to $1,000 per like thing.
Mm-hmm.
My measurements aren't like fit measurements, which means they don't fit to one size, so I don't usually do e-com. I usually just do like campaigns and commercials, which I wish I could do e-com. I might be able to do it soon, but
you just said you don't like it.
No, I like it because it's regular good money.
But you said 8 hours of trying on clothes.
Yeah, but that's easier than like.
I mean, you are getting paid to try on clothes.
I'm getting paid $1,000 to try on outfits.
£1,000
to try on outfits.
Yeah.
Life could be worse.
Spencer could never. Look at his outfit.
No, I need to get paid $1,000 to try on outfits, if anything. Honestly.
I used to work for this company when I was here with my old agency. Because there's also a behind the scenes modeling. Like, if you don't want to be photographed or anything, there's a whole behind the scenes sector that you can do.
What does that mean?
It's fit modeling. So if your measurements, and you can be an average person, you don't need to even look like a model or whatever to do this. If your measurements fit like a size 10 perfectly, you can be a fit model where they model clothes on you. Like they fit them to you before the production process.
Okay.
And then also you can do showroom modeling, which is sometimes I would get showroom, which once I got like kicked off the showroom because they were like, you look too young, we can't have you, you just need to sit in the room. And the woman was like crying and I'm like, I still get paid.
She was crying because you were too young looking.
Yeah, she was like, because they were doing Sofia Vergara, like they were showing it to, basically this is when they shop clothing lines to like Kohl's, Walmart, like that sort of thing. She was like, you look too young, and the clothes, like they don't, and I was like, it's okay, like I'll
was Sofia
out.
Vergara there?
No.
Oh
no. These are people who, like, actually design her stuff and, like...
Oh, yeah, yeah. They don't design their own shit. I knew that.
But, so, yeah, fit and showroom. Showroom, you got paid $200 an hour. So, they would call you for, like, 2-3 hours every few weeks.
Skirt. You said $200 an hour?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, why don't you look into modeling?
I have a little bit. I did actually do something in L.A. It was a hair model. It was very similar of, like, I'm standing in line at a store. And they're like, are you a model? And I'm like, no. I was already standing in line to apply for a job at this, like, juice bar or something like that. And they were in front of me, and they kept looking back at me. And then they were like, would you be interested in doing some modeling for us? And he's a hairstylist, and my hair is super long then. And they were like, we just want you to come in, and we'll cut your hair, and we'll film it, and you can pose, and we'll shoot some pics, and that's it.
And
I got paid, like,
oh,
I got paid, like, $100 or something.
Oh, nice.
Like, nothing crazy. But yeah,
they extorted you.
I'll be a bald model.
Yeah,
I want. I'll wait like 20 years when I'm like bald, and I'll be like a model for like blue collar like clothing, like high vis vest. Yeah, that's what I'm gonna do.
My sister lives over there now. She lives on Carson.
I thought your sister lived in California.
She just moved back.
Oh.
Yeah, like 6 months ago.
Somebody doesn't listen to the podcast.
She was on the podcast actually. That's a good episode. Like she was.
That's
she's
not
very interesting. It's all right.
Listen, I listen to no podcasts.
Exactly. And the fact that she listened to some of one of our episodes is enough.
And it just happened to be the one where
one of best friends,
James mentioned me, and then Mike goes, she's not going to listen
to this. Yeah, and that was a surprise. That was a surprise.
And I'm like, surprise.
Yeah, yeah.
But
Think I bullied you that bad in high school that you listened to my show.
That's because my mother, like, always liked you for some reason. And him. Like, she was like, you know, she's like, Spencer's just such a good kid. He's just so respectful. Like, he always says hi to me, and no one else does.
I feel like I knew her. There's a good chance I knew her before you. Yeah.
She was always working at South?
No.
Oh, I was going to say, because I went to South.
She worked at South when he was there. Oh, yeah. And then she went somewhere else, and then went somewhere else, and then now is back.
I was going to say, because, yeah, I went to South. I don't think I ever.
At the time that we were in middle school, she worked at, like, Temple Hill or something like that.
Ah.
But that's crazy. She has all the lore, so get her on. But
that would be fun, having an outside perspective.
We'll bring her in for the documentary.
There we go. Honestly, not a bad idea. Genuinely.
The doxing of Newberg. Just.
Oh, no.
That's why I want to talk to Steve, actually, because I want to tell him about that, because I know he'll laugh at it with me.
I mentioned it to him.
Yeah, yeah, I know he'll laugh at it.
What, the doxing of Newberg or the other?
No, like the one that you told me. Oh, not the musical. I don't know.
Wait, you don't know about that. Do you know about the musical thing or no?
Not really.
All right, we'll tell you after.
Well, yes. Okay.
We're not going to tell you on camera.
Okay. This is a super top secret personal beeswax.
Yes. This is friends, not bully and bullier.
I'm still going to like repost it and be like, I went at my high school.
The name of the episode is going to be The Girl I Bullied in High School.
Please.
Yeah.
Mike was mean to me.
Mike was really mean to me. Go ahead, lay it on. That's right.
Kale, was I mean to you in high school? Thank you. Yeah. See, I have an ally here. I have one friend.
I used to be friends with Kale in high school.
I will say
and
this.
And I used to sing his name. Adam. Like every time I walked into the classroom, like it was a song I had.
And and that doesn't sound like a crazy person.
I do think though, in your defense, from my perspective, you're only mean to me and like my freshman year, but also
I remember my first interaction with Mike, and it was my sophomore year.
Damn, I don't remember any of this shit, but go.
My sophomore year, and someone had said to me like, oh, Mike's in the musical, like I didn't know he could sing. And I was like trying to like bond because we were gonna be like scene partners, and I was like, oh yeah, someone was like so surprised you're in the musical because they didn't know you could sing. And you went, who doesn't know I could sing? Who doesn't? And you like punched something backstage, and I was
definitely,
like,
definitely you are 1000% over exaggerating.
I was like, who is this guy? Like,
that did not happen.
And you were like,
I already know exactly what you're talking about. You're over-exaggerating, but definitely
went,
continue the story.
Tell me who it was. That was my first interaction with you.
Nice.
And then you used to play that weed game backstage where you would, like, grow weed.
Are you talking about?
It was, like, a hydroponics game. You could, like, grow weed on your phone. Like, it was a game. And you would play it backstage. And then,
I think you're making...
I am 100% not making this up.
I played a weed game?
Yes, and I was like, what are you playing? And you're like, I'm growing my plants. Like, and it was like a weed game. And then the girl at the time...
No, I used to be really into Supercard. Like, I think... What the fuck? Weed game? I didn't even smoke weed.
I know, but you had this game on your phone.
I had a game on my phone where I played growed
weed. Like, I remember that.
You have always been an avid mobile gamer.
That's not true. But I am now, thanks to Godzilla Battle Line. Use the discount code. This is a game I just got. I'm so into it.
I play The Sims.
I love monsters like this. A weed game.
Yeah, I used to grow it.
Fuck.
Yeah.
Did I sell it?
Was it like a tycoon
in the game?
Was it like a tycoon game?
No, it was like you grew it and then you like sold it.
Yeah.
You had to like cure it. You had to like pick it when it was ready for curing.
But then once you have enough money, you can buy like machines that will cure it for you.
I have no clue because
I think you're making this shit up.
I am not making this up because I remember I was like, why are you playing
weed game?
And then I remember you like.
That doesn't sound like me.
You were so angry at the time because you like weren't playing football. Like, you were like, you got kicked off the football. Well, someone told me you got
kicked off the football.
Someone said you got kicked off
the football. What the fuck? You see why I'm pissed off? Everybody's coming up with, I played a weed game.
Well, you did play a weed game.
Kicked off the football game.
No, and then you were telling me, you're like, I didn't get kicked off, but, like, I barely played. Like, I barely got to play.
Yeah, I sucked.
Also, I could totally see you saying, who said I can't sing? Who did that?
You went, I'm literally in what's the boys thing?
Glee.
You're like, I'm literally in Boys Glee. I'm one of the best ones.
Such a poor feat to mention that you can
see. Literally at the time,
dude,
I had no clue about anything. I was still very like baby theater
and
girl
weed game.
In my sophomore year. Like my audition, I still could not sight read at that point. And I still can barely sight read. I didn't take any chorus. I didn't take any music theory at the time. Correct. So like people, I think, thought that I was more, like, into it than I was. And I was like, no, that's
really how you hold yourself, I'd say. It's good. It's a good thing. It's your aura. If aura existed in 2016, we'd be saying the aura of Brianna Benet. Also, with a name like Brianna Benet, like,
yo, wait a minute. Hold on. That's such a good. Nah, wait.
You have to grow plants.
Weed Firm.
Yes!
That's what it was called. Yo, I did play that game because now the image pops back in my head. What? Oh, the image pops back in my head now. I was like, what were you talking about? It wasn't just, damn, huh? So you were somebody that right out of high school went right down the auditioning route with the, I'm going to move the city to whatever. Like, yeah. What was that like for you to like realize this wasn't working, this wasn't for me? Because that is such like a system to go into at such a young age. Is either college if you want to be an actor, or I'm just going to go to the city and audition. Because I hear it from all the kids that just graduated. Like, yeah, I'm just going to move to the city and audition. Like, yeah. What are some of the key takeaways from that experience?
I think a good barrier for me was that I didn't come from money. Mm-hmm. So there was very limited to what I could do and how many auditions I could go to. Mm-hmm. Because we ultimately did not move back to New York City and I had to commute. My first audition was the day after high school graduation.
Wow.
I went to Hamilton audition and it was a fluke audition because I was only there for like two, three hours before I was seen.
Wow.
Which never happens.
I bet you were like, this is it. This is,
yeah, I was like, this is amazing. So I did that one in June, went back for Hamilton in September. I probably did other ones in the summertime, but I don't remember them. Hamilton was kind of like my first experience, and kind of wore me down emotionally. And which is ultimately why I stopped auditioning. And then just like gave into the modeling to see where
it could go. Now, what do you mean, like, as far as emotionally, I tore you down?
Well, so I got called back then in January from the September audition. And that was for the same tour that Chandra went on.
Okay.
And me at 18 years old, getting in for this big show, I was like, this is it. Like, this is my big break. Like, they love me. They think I'm great. Ultimately, they thought I looked too young. But what messed with my head was, like I said, I did a lot of things in the city as a teenager.
Yeah.
Those people who worked in the industry would be like, you are so good. I wish you were 18. And then we could like cast you and use you. So I thought my ticket was, okay, I just need to turn 18 and then I can work. But then when I turned 18, everyone was like, you look so young. Like the roles that you're right for, you can't do them yet. And I'm like, well, then what was the point of this? So August of 2021. That's not true. Sometime in 2021,
okay.
I went out for the SpongeBob National Tour.
Yeah.
What
a fucking sentence.
I know. And I was called in for Pearl and Sandy.
Wow.
And then ultimately decided Pearl was the better fit.
Okay.
Because Pearl's song is absolutely insane also.
Is she a prominent character in the show?
She has this huge song called like, where she's like belting the entire time, like about her dad, like not listening to her. Her birthday party is the premise of the musical.
Are boys who cry there?
Yes.
Oh, so you're like,
and you have to skateboard to be in the show.
Yeah, somebody sent me that, and
that
I
was
go,
me.
Where the fuck do you think I'm that good
it was
at skateboarding? To go,
I had sent you the audition.
I watched like a clip. I was like, let me see what they're looking for. I was like, yo, I can't do any of this shit.
I don't know.
Get the fuck.
I
suck.
I just think everyone can just try stuff.
I could walk around on stage with my skateboard. And maybe do one trick. Terribly.
I went in. I got to finals. Like, I was top two, top. I think I was top two for Pearl at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, how old are you? Like, you have a baby face. And I was like, no, I'm 18. Like, I'm good. I think I was 19 at that time. I was like, I'm 19. Like, I'm good. And they're like, amazing. They're like, we love you so much. Like, are you prepared to, like, go on tour? Basically insinuating that maybe I could be up for it.
Yeah.
Then they completely ghosted me. And I never heard back, and then the casting announcement came out, and it wasn't even a girl who was like in it, like in the room, like when I was there. So I was
some
like,
producer's daughter or some shit.
No, and the girl was talented. Like, I'm not trashing her. Like, she took the role. Like, I would do the same thing. But like, I was confused at casting for like, why are you telling me like, rah, 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 like basically insinuating I have a really good chance at getting this,
yeah.
And then not even sending me an email to say, hey, we're not going forward. And that's also another difference I see. In England, they do send you emails like to be like, we're not going to go forward with you at this time.
Oh, okay.
And Hamilton would give me reasons in the UK.
Gotcha.
Like, they'd be like, this is what we noticed like this time, or this is just not right. So after that SpongeBob thing, I was so like, I was like, I literally can't do this anymore because I keep getting so close. And what messes with your head is when people tell you how talented you are, and people tell you how good you are, and they're like, you're amazing, like, you're this, and then they don't ever pick you. And I was kind of talking to Kara about this too, because I think we had similar experiences where it's like, people are like, you're so good, you're so talented, like, why aren't you getting picked? I don't know. Like, and it was a lot. And so I decided, like, I started going to FIT at that time for photography. Mm. And then that's when I started modeling.
Gotcha.
And okay. I did not audition. I had not auditioned once since August 2021.
Because I remember you and your mom were, I ran into you guys at ShopRite because I was still working there. And you, I think it was around that time you were like, yeah, I'm not, or maybe it was before that. No, Panera Bread. It was one of we ran into some place somewhere, and you were like, "Yeah, I'm not auditioning anymore for stuff." And I'm like, "What?" That's all like I know that you were doing.
We did run into you at ShopRite.
That was before that.
And I was saying like, "Oh, I got modeling, like I got a modeling contract." And you were like, "What are you gonna do? Be in a smiling tampon commercial for $10,000?"
What doesn't that sound great?
And I was like, "Yeah." And then before I left to London,
but like also too, right? Like you could have took what I was saying, like. I was stocking French fries, so.
Oh, I didn't take it as an offense. All right, yeah, good. I took it as like.
I was putting French fries in the freezer.
You said I'd advertise tampons for $10,000.
Yeah, I fucking would. Anybody? No? Okay. Back to the Pearl. But like, think about where you were right out the gate at such a young age, right? Like, you're what, 18? How old were you when that SpongeBob thing happened?
19.
Most people have been trying to get to that stage for the last like 20, 30 years. Again, you didn't know any, like you went from high school to that. Yeah. There is like this middle period, I think, especially as artists, where like we're so used to the system of things. Like for me as an actor, I knew I was going to get the role just because I showed up and I didn't like that. I was like, that's why I don't think I'm a good actor, because I'm getting cast in like things because I'm in high school and there's nobody else that can do this role. So I didn't want to go down the acting route because I was like, well, I know I'm not talented. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, that, yeah.
But again, too, and on the, you kind of had the opposite of that. It's like, I know I'm talented, I know whatever, but then it still, it does like this weird loop of like,
it's so,
what's
it's,
wrong with me? But the truth is, like, with any actor, with any artist, you don't, you're never going to fucking know when it hits. It's just going to hit or it's not.
Just one day.
And I think, Hampton said this to me. He was like, if you go into everything like this has to hit, this has to be it, like if it doesn't work out, like it's gonna emotionally shatter you.
And
that's why
and at the time I was just gonna say, at the time I was putting, like, especially because of my situation, like my family situation at the time, like I felt very responsible for getting my mother and I like out of our situation, and I was like, this has to be like the one thing. Now, and I think that my like faith also does come into play with that, because it's like nothing's gonna be your one thing, and there's like it's biblical in a way. It's like Jesus has to be your one thing. Like stuff can't be your one thing, or else you'll go absolutely insane. And you'll searching and running after things that are not real, and not like you can't base yourself in them.
Mm-hmm.
So now when I like go into auditions, of course I always get like the what if this is like it, but now I'll go and I'm like more me, and I've noticed that while I don't book as much, my agent, one of my agents, Erica from in London, she's very much like I was telling her how disappointed it was because I was up for like a razor brand, the South Africa one. I wanted that job so bad. When I did my call back, they were like, we love you, like thank you like so much, like it was great. And I asked her, I'm like, what the heck? They were like, they just didn't feel like you were right for this commercial, but like that they did love you. They thought you did great work. And I was like, that is so disappointing. And she's like, I know it's really disappointing, but hundreds of girls go up for that. And I was on hold.
Yeah.
Out of like a tiny amount of people, of a huge amount of people. And she was like, and you're building relationships with these big casting directors who, when the time comes where you're 100% perfect for that role, they're going to look to you and they're going to pick you. But I think that also my experience in high school was different because I felt like I knew I was good, but I wasn't treated as if I was good. I felt like there was people who were pushed ahead of me. And I really had to like show up and be like, listen to me. Like, I want this. So I didn't just get things like it wasn't like, oh, I'm the only one who could do this, so I'm going to show up and I'm going to get the role.
Yeah.
That's, I feel like too, like, I literally will use examples like, if Mike and I had examples that are like, at 18 I did this and got super close, and at 19 I did this and got super close. I use examples like that for Mike and I. We've had a handful of opportunities that aren't, definitely not on that scale, but they're like, if we got this gig, if we got this job, if we got consistent work from this, we'd be comfortable and we'd be able to work full-time as Zion Industry
Films. Our, yeah.
Like, and that's always, there's been probably like 5 to 10 opportunities like that in the last couple years. And I never get discouraged when those things don't pan out, because I'm like, well,
we used to.
But it's like those kinds of opportunities happen a couple times a year. Like, it's about to happen when that's going to be the thing that
happens. That's the thing. You're
18 and 19. Getting called back for these fucking
SpongeBob
and Hamilton.
I love
and it's like, and you're this, no offense, but you're like a no name that's coming out, and they're like, yo, who is this insanely talented person? We got to get, I want to see more. I want to see more. But then think of it from a very business perspective. Like, you wouldn't cast somebody that you've never worked with before, or you've never have seen what they can do professionally. Yeah. And I hear those stories and I'm like, holy shit, bro, like, that's fucking insane. I feel like, obviously, and you're figuring this out in London as well, those opportunities still come and you're ready for it.
They come.
But opportunity is when luck meets readiness.
I think so. Something like that.
We're
really good at half quote unquote. you're close. You're close to it. And I think something I used to do, I would like, oh, like, why is this not working? But I'm like, yo, I was never really like trying this shit. I remember, I don't know if Kara told you this conversation her and I had, but like, Kara, love you. But she had a performance. She fucked up, forgot the words, whatever. And then she was just like, I don't remember what it was. She was like, why am I not casting or anything? I just really want to do this so bad. I'm like, well, are you auditioning? Are you getting seen? Are you trying? And then she was like, well, sometimes. And I'm like, no, it's either has to be like yes or no. And I'm the same way. It's like, I want to be a film actor. I haven't even fucking gotten pictures of myself taking, like, put a reel together. Like, there's a certain amount of, like, stop lying to yourself and just try. But people internalize the fucking, like, oh, it's not working. This is a failure. This is whatever. Like, I should have got this. It should have been my thing. It's just like, it's not going to work like that. And I think, even if you're not booking shit, if you even get to that point where, like, all right, I got super close, which means you can get to a certain level, you can get to a certain distance with this thing, it is 100% possible to go one more step through the door, and something will hit eventually, whether it's SpongeBob, whether it's a Razorblade commercial. Like, you just have to keep fucking trying. And that's, like, the thing that they don't necessarily teach kids at a young age. I don't think they really do. I don't ever recall being, like, told, like, you got to really try, because they phrase it in a way of, like, oh, go to college, go for it, and then you'll network, and from there everything will pan out. That's, like, the broad, generalized version of that, and then it's not like that.
Well,
ain't like that, fam.
The thing is, first of all, thanks, Mike. That was really inspirational.
Thank you. Like, I don't even know what the fuck genuinely, I just said. Genuinely. Don't even know what I just
that
said.
That was actually, like, I'm like, oh, I can do it.
You wouldn't be on this couch. Jesus Christ.
I'm in the
couch. Wouldn't be cemented into the couch if you couldn't.
The thing is, my mom growing up trained me for the professional industry. Yeah. Like, that woman is tough. And that was what I need. Like, well, that was what I needed. I tell her now, like, you can be a bit softer. Like, I know what I'm supposed to do now. Like, I'm not in training anymore. Like, I used to do singing competitions growing up. Mm-hmm. Even in high school. But I didn't tell people when I went and did them. Wow. Because one of my teachers in sixth grade said I was conceited because I told my friend I won a competition. So then I was like, oh my gosh. So I didn't want to talk about anything I did. But that's a short story. And then I didn't speak to her for a week.
The friend or the teacher?
My teacher. My mom said, if she can't say nice things to you, then just don't talk. And so I didn't speak to her for a week. Barb. I would go to competitions, and we have this belief, and I still hold it, that what's the point of showing up if you're not going to do the best that you can? Like, who cares who's there? Like, you have to do the best that you can. And you have to, like, blow it out of the park for yourself. I don't care who the heck is there. I don't care if – because sometimes I would go into competitions. I remember once there was a competition that was being held at, like, NFA. It was had nothing to do with NFA. But I walked in, and these two girls who also went to competitions, they went, oh, she's here. Like, we're not going to win. And my mom was like, that was stupid. I did not win. And they were like – she was like, that's dumb that they would say that because every judge is different. Judges have hated me in the past because a lot of times they'll be like, let's give it to the underdog. And they'll be like, well, you're like, you seem professional. It's like, you don't need the win.
Ridiculous.
That was told to me.
Bullshit.
So much.
Give it to the underdog.
Especially in high school. Okay. In high school, there was a few times where it was like, oh, well, it's like she needs the win. Like, you already know you're good. Or like, I would have to be like, am I doing a good job? And they're like, well, yeah, but you already know that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yes,
I would take that. I'd be like, all right, bet.
Okay, but like, I felt like I wanted to like be directed. I wanted to like act, which is why I ended up going and doing things in New York City. But what was I saying? My mom was very clear, like, you always have to show up and like be the best. Like, there's no point in not being at the top of your game.
Yeah.
And you can't complain if you're not at the top of your game. Because if you are slacking on your vocal training and you know that you can't sing certain things, you can't show up and be like, well, I was the best in the room. Like, I don't know. Like, no, you weren't. There are people who are singing like 10 times better than you. So I, because she says that, and also when I would do like NECSD events, my mom would go, you better sing well. There's people I know here. And she was always like, I work in the district. Don't embarrass me. Like, so it was very much like, I have to come and bring my A game. And now going into auditions, like if I get a theater audition over there, I'll go and rent a rehearsal studio and sing for like 2 hours and make sure that that's done. And then I'll sing for another 2 hours and I will work on that material and make sure that I know it so deeply in my bones that even if I were to like forget it, it's in my body and I just do it.
Yeah.
And like me being like not really in it would be, oh, I know this. Like even when I get Hamilton calls, as many times as I've been in for Hamilton, I book the rehearsal studio. And I mean, it's $15 an hour. So sometimes I'll book like an hour.
That's not bad.
Or 2 hours. Yeah.
That's really awesome.
Yeah. And it's just a soundproof space where I could just belt for like 2 hours. And I'll just use it as I'll practice my whole book just in case they want songs from my book. Because I have done that before, but now there's a whole new set of talent who's coming in with me to go in, whose first times it is. And they're going to study that material like it's the first time they've seen it, because it's the first time they've seen it. So you always have to be on your A game. And there was a time period where I was like, I really want to be, I want to do theater, like so bad. I wasn't auditioning for theater at the time. And then I was like, okay, let me try and get an agent so I can start auditioning for theater, so I can start doing something. Because you can't win it if you're not in it. So,
facts.
But like with film, I think my agency over there is a bit too small, but my modeling agency does get me, like the director I worked with on that last commercial I did, they do like a bunch of, they do films, they do like, nice. You know those narrative commercials where it's like, to believe, to inspire, and it's like kids running. Like where it looks like a cinematic thing. That's the type of stuff he does. And I was like, that's like kind of, it's like, to believe, to inspire. I am not my past. I am my present.
Heading back to your new home, the UK. What are you looking to attack? What are you looking to get after?
Well, when I go back, it's Fashion Week. So looking to attack that.
Yeah.
Hopefully get in a show. There's one client, Caroline Vito. I wanted to walk for her forever. Her height limit is 5'7". I am 5'8", so it's perfect. Nice. So hoping for that. I tend to work in September, October because a lot of commercials are being filmed. So I'm really hoping to do that. There's a few shows that I really want to audition for that I told my agent about. So I just want to jump into it and just
hit the ground running.
I want to work. Like, that's it at the end of the day. Like, I just want to work. Really get back into that. I want to focus on, like, I feel like I maybe had a bit too much, like I was too lax. I don't think I was too lax. I'm kind of hard on myself. Like, I could be doing the most and be like, it's not enough.
I'm the same
way. I need to do more. Yeah. And everyone's like, there's literally nothing you can do. You just have to sit and wait. And I'm like, I don't want to sit and wait. I could be doing something.
Yeah.
So I want to do that. I would love to go abroad again. work with Adidas in Germany. Adidas.
They definitely send me some shoes, though, when you do that.
I wish they would send me something. Like, that would be amazing. I
don't give you anything?
No. I try on the clothes, and they're like, okay, all done now. Tungsten. leave. Go back. So, yeah, I just want to finally book, like, those big commercials. Not even for the money, but for the money, too. Because I actually really enjoy shooting big productions.
It is fun.
Like, the last commercial I just filmed, I told you, was like a trailer production. Like, it was the first one I did. Like, there was different locations. Not the first one, because I did when I was a kid, but like first one in adulthood, like different locations, like trailers. And I enjoyed that environment. I enjoyed being on set. And then when I went on set, I knew what was expected of me. They expected me to do good work, and I like was able to deliver because I hadn't done like a production like that in so long. I was like, what if I like can't deliver that? And I was able to do it. So that was like a boost. And then so since then, I'm like, okay, like I'm ready to like go for it. Yeah.
All right.
That's.
Well, I think being on this podcast will definitely make you.
I know.
Somebody's going to see it.
Someone's going to see it. Nah, and they're going to go, who's that girl?
All right, Brianna. One last thing that all guests have to do. You have the chance to leave here with something cool. Maybe. Or. $20. So you can have what's bucks. In the mystery box or the $20.
Oh. This would have been a good point to like watch the actual podcast because then I could see what.
We've had some really amazing gifts come out of this mystery box. We have some really bad ones.
It's a mystery.
It's a mystery.
Or $20. Do I get to find out what's in the mystery box after?
Nope.
No?
You have to go back to London knowing that you took $20 that you're then going to convert.
To $15.
To $15. So technically you're losing money by taking the $20, or you can have what's in the mystery
box. But like, what's in the mystery box? Like, is it going to fit my suitcase?
I don't know.
It fits in the mystery box.
It fits in the mystery box.
But is it like heavy? I don't know. Can I feel it?
Nope. You got to either pick the mystery box or the $20.
What if there's a $100 mystery box?
It could very much well be.
I need $20 though. You know what? To make fun television, I'll choose the mystery box.
All right, good. Hell yeah.
It better not suck, please.
It might.
Oh, no.
It might.
Do people pick the mystery box usually or the $20?
Nobody has picked the $20.
Oh.
And nobody
I love
has.
It that everyone's.
What if I didn't pick it? What would you have done with
it? I would have took it home. What do you mean? It's a package of gluten-free chocolate chip cookies.
Shout out to my celiac. Shout out to Ashley German.
Yep. There you go. See, I remember things.
Thank you.
Because we're friends.
I really love that everyone really, really contemplates between $20.
Yeah, like, that was the most contemplation between the two.
This is practically $20, so.
Probably.
But also, I would like to point out that this is really affirming for our friendship now because you used to tell me I was faking and that you wanted to feed me gluten to find out.
Run that back.
High school? Well, you didn't tell it to me. You told it to someone else.
You were faking.
You said that I don't actually.
You kept trying to feed me gluten.
No, you kept saying that I don't actually have celiac.
Oh, and that I was going to feed you
gluten. And then I was faking. And then you told people, let's give her gluten and find out.
Yeah, that's totally. What do you mean?
And I was like, you're going to kill me. You're going to poison me.
I remember there being a lot of tension over doing Panera runs.
That was because everybody fucking. All right, hold on.
I was
everybody
never
stay
involved.
To the end. Like and subscribe. And if you like this episode, let us know. Thank you, Brianna. Best of luck. We're
thank
friends.
We are.
I respect you.
Come
and
to
I'm
Europe.
I'm sorry for everything.
You don't have to apologize, but thank
Diff
you.
Diff goes to Europe.
Diff goes to Europe.
Diff goes
we'll make
to Europe.
Pit stop in London before we go to Norway to film the documentary about Moiko's dad,
who's not even in Norway anymore.
Oh, shit. Yeah,
more developing on that later. When we come back, all right, no, seriously, thank you, Kale, thank you, Spencer, thank you, Brianna, thank you, Barbara Benet, too.
Can we get actually
you raised
really
a good
big
woman.
Thanks
you should
to
play
Kale.
My song at the end. That
big
goes,
thanks to
thank
Kale.
You so.
Two thanks.
Double thanks.
Don't worry, Kale. This is going to be on your resume, which means you're going to get a job out of this one day.
Thanks, Kale.
All right.
Shout out to Kale.
All right, fuckers. Good night and good luck. And cut. All right, what were you talking? Okay.